Welcome to Oz NFTs, NFTs are for everyone podcast.
Every week, we'll bring you Australian artists, collectors, and builders that are paving the way in the Web3 space.
We'll go deep into their stories, how they're reshaping digital culture, and how you can get involved.
Josh, Pete.
Yes.
What up?
Sats and Dave. Look at this. Look at where we ended up. I didn't expect this. I'm not going
to
lie.
Welcome to our Future Art HQ, right?
Oh, wow. It's very experimental.
We're actually in Ibiza right now.
I'll take that. How's it going, gents? Thanks for taking the time to come down and speak with us. We really do appreciate it.
Our pleasure. I mean, it's been great connecting with you online. And just seeing this Aussie follow Aussie thing just explode. And it's just that, you know, that's where we met. I meet up with one of the other guys.
NFT Sid.
NFT Sid. And just great. You just come in to connect with me, you know. And then we followed up and here we are today.
A couple tequilas. Goes a long way.
Few.
Standard Future Art way, yeah. But we're having an Australian moment really right now. Like, yeah, something's like really happening. A bigger of a wave. Yeah, I think what the thing that's impressed us most is the connecting of the dots. So we've seen, you know, from Future Art's point of view, we've really come from the art and the artist's perspective, but then to be able to connect with like the DeFi guys and then connect with the more degen element of the scene, I feel like it's sort of put a circle around it and really brought it together.
Yeah, 100%. Australian Web3 takeover has taken a seat at the table.
About time.
It's like there was a meme. It was like, it's like a warrior like carrying like four blokes, and it was like Aussie Web3, and it's just like carrying crypto Twitter. It's just like, fuck yeah, man.
I mean, like being in the middle of a bear market, as you know, so many people have pointed out, and to have this sort of celebration moment has been really uplifting for everybody, and especially for like Dave and I, who, you know, this is sort of where we started Future Art, in 2020, and to see how far, NFT scene has come and the crypto scene has come has been pretty, you know, pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we first got into crypto and doing the workshops with Bucky Poobar, big shout out,
Bucky.
He used to do these Ethereum workshops every week, twice a week, and we did them for 2 years, and that's how I really, you know, got to understand Ethereum and everything about it. He has say 20s, 71s, but it was the community every week, twice a week. And it was, you know, these are computer science heads. We were the creatives and we're all trying to work out how we're going to fit together. And, you know, when COVID happened, he obviously had to stop doing them. And I really felt this gap of like, oh, this real life connection, this community. And it was only until Sats kind of really introduced me to crypto art and the community around crypto Twitter that I was just like, oh, this is it. This is the community. This is the creatives and also the crypto element. And this is where we're all kind of coming together. So,
yeah, but I guess like looking back the last bear market, because we are in a bear market right now. And, you know, what we were able to achieve, you know, before starting Future Art in that bear market was really, you know, super important. It was that time when there was no froth in the air, when there was no noise. And, you know, Dave took the opportunity to do a course at RMIT in blockchain and crypto. And I took a chance to do a course from London School of Economics, which was focused on blockchain and disruption. And it was in that bear market that we both really decided that crypto and, and NFTs would be something that we wanted to pursue. So having that time.
It takes a lot to have that realization in a bear market. Right. Normally you see people coming in when things are going well.
What and then run it? Whenever it goes bad.
Exactly. Right. So what was it that you guys saw about the space that you're like, this is it?
Oh, I think we've talked about this a little bit, but, you know, Dave and I have worked together for like 15 years, in the music industry and music publishing and recording, you know, Dave with the Potbellies and me working as a manager. And I think after 15 years of that, we saw a lot of the limitations of the creator community or being a creator, what it was like to record and release music. And there was a lot of frustration built up around that, I think. And crypto was something that we were looking for answers. So we were like, is crypto going to be an answer to getting paid faster, to owning your own rights, to cutting out the middleman? And, you know, through investigation and whatever, we were somewhat frustrated with what that meant for music NFTs, but it was definitely the art stuff, the first incarnations of art-led NFTs that really spiked our imagination. And we were like, okay, yeah, wow, you can get paid. You can cut out the middleman. You can go direct to your artist. There's a pathway here. So we were really like buzzed off that.
And also like the fact that you can put music and art together as an audiovisual piece of content and sell that as pretty much an MP4 on the blockchain, for me, was just revolutionary.
Yeah, we understood that, yeah. We also understood how exciting it was and how empowering it was to create something and then get paid. Yeah. We're talking about that a lot.
Man.
That is nothing more exciting than that, you know,
and as you said, with the mint the other day in Brisbane, mm-hmm. like that feeling of releasing something, going for mint, and knowing that you're getting paid as people are minting, that money's going into your wallet. You just can't beat that. I mean, it's, you know, for distribution, I mean, it's just like another world.
I think also, like, the, you know, we look back now and it's only been like 2 years, but sitting here in this venue where we really rode out COVID, like how much of an impact that had on, you know, on creators like Dave, who used to make, you know, all his money from touring. And even, you know, for a lot of the early crypto artists that we spoke to, they all, you know, lost their jobs during COVID. And it really was something that was born out of that explosion. And I guess, you know, with Future Art, we were able to sort of like capture some of that energy and really focus in on that and try and help these artists to bring their artwork through. But I do think that looking back now, being in this room that we spent so much time in COVID, it brings back a lot of the memories. But that was a real pivotal moment for a lot of creators, having to find another way to make money.
I love the origin story of Future Art. Peak of COVID, you guys are just like bored, you need something to do, and then you're like, you're in like a lockdown in a hotel and you're hanging out here in this amazing studio and you're like, all right, cool, so like what are we gonna do?
It's an interesting story on my perspective, you know, as being an artist and Sats being my manager, and we're having that relationship and that dynamic, and through 19 he's starting to you know, collect crypto art, and he got a very extensive early collection, and he was showing me, and he actually gave me my first piece, and I got hooked in, and I was buying stuff from Nifty Gateway. And, you know, he goes, Dave, look, the world's gone to shit. We need, I'm coming back because LA is going to burn. And it pretty much literally burning with Black Lives Matter and everything that happened there. Mm. He goes, you know, Potbelly's isn't anymore because we pulled the pin. We didn't have a commercial relationship. We obviously had a great friendship and we got a great history. He's like, how do you want to do like a little pop-up? And just to show my collection, because I don't want to look at it on my screen. I want to see it big.
I want to see it like projected up here, right?
And so that's pretty much where the concept kind of came from. And we said, oh, we'll just get a little cafe. We'll get a lot of mates and a little, you know, a few screens and a projection. And, you know,
Little did we know that we'd end up turning into like, you know, multi-thousand people, like events, opening Vivid and
for
stuff.
For Vivid, for the city.
Can you tell us a little bit about like the road to Vivid and what that experience was like?
Interesting, actually. The guy doing AV for us, Levi Five Star and Q-Cent, was here, and they helped with all the audio. And he put a little video online. And obviously, as we told you, it was in the middle of COVID and there was all the restrictions around how many people he could have in a room and all this. So it didn't look that great on the video, you know what I mean? And but he did it very stylistically from the decks and then the big projection. And next of all, Stephen Ferris, who was the head of music of Vivid, was like, oh, what is this? Yeah. Like, you guys need to put an expression of interest in. Like, you called me, we brought him in here. He's like, yeah, you guys got to do this.
I think it also is interesting because when we started Future Art and when we started collecting crypto art and NFTs, I always thought to ourselves, well, fuck, this is going to be amazing in 10 years. Like, when the rest of the world catches up in 10 years, it's going to be great. Like, if I buy this piece of art now, maybe this piece of art might be worth something a decade from now. Little did we know how quickly this explosion would catch up. So us having a really small event here for 300 people in 2020 and then following it up with another, you know, larger event in April, little did we know that, you know, the explosion that NFTs would have. And we really felt that because we were sort of like, you know, caught up in that, just the amount of press interest and being up, you know, upscaled by Vivid. That was a goal of ours for 5, 6, 7 years. But that happened in, you know, 12 months.
Yeah, you peaked your timing right to follow that white rabbit.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That was actually the name of the second thing, follow the white rabbit.
Yeah, it's a bigger story, though, I think, for the whole of the scene and a lot of the artists that were in the scene, a lot of the early, you know, degens. I mean, I think everyone felt the same thing. It was this incredible heady rise that happened pretty much out of nowhere.
Oh, and Steve obviously picked that up, and you guys had an amazing immersive AR experience.
It was pretty much so. We did the two events here, and they seen it, and they were like, "Look, the expression of interest is." Oh, so we did the one in January, and they were like, "The expression of interest is closing in a few weeks. So put in your pitch," and that was going to be for the Vivid in May, but then COVID went hard, so they were like, "Right, we'll push it to August." Then August was like, no, we got to push it till October.
Yeah, COVID really fucked.
COVID really just whipped it on. So we couldn't actually do it for Vivid till actually this year, 22. And we pulled it off in Home Nightclub because we you know, this venue can only hold so many people. So we went to Home Nightclub in Darling Harbour, which was on the Light Walk.
But in saying that, like, COVID obviously, you know, it being such a key factor in it, but it also opened up for us an incredible opportunity to like interact with some of our like friends from Melbourne and Victoria. So pretty much on the very first Future Art, they closed the borders 2 days before the show. So we had Maddie DCL coming up. We also had Mark-O-Matic, Giant Swan, and we were super
GT and Jane.
We were super gutted that the Melbourne folk couldn't come up. But at that point, GT and Jane, shout out Oshi Gallery and Oshi Gallery, they stepped up and they were like, hey, we'd love to host a Future Art event at their venue in Melbourne. And that was really pivotal for us. It was like, oh, fuck, like, there's other people in Australia that really share our passion for this stuff. And that was a real seminal moment because even though the borders were closed and, you know, we had this event here in Sydney, they put on a fucking cracker event in Melbourne. And that really solidified, I mean, I guess a little bit of the early Australian, crypto art stuff.
Yeah.
It's awesome. We were just down there the other week and the space is beautiful. They've curated an incredible location.
Yeah, we can't wait.
And I think like we are like, like you said, like, are we early? I mean, like compared to like a lot of people, yeah. Compared to some others, no. But you guys have really like pioneered and like without it kind of going like too high level, it's like you guys like GT, Jane, Oshi crew, you guys, Future Art, like are the OGs in the space, but you've also rode and you understand the nuance of like distribution. You understand how artists' life, how musicians' life can change, how that, I guess, bubbling counterculture is now coming up, right? Because you guys have done that. You were like saying off air at the, we're at the Imperial Social Club. Shout out that pub.
It's one of the oldest pubs in Sydney,
Classic.
I think what you're trying to say is that like NFT is a new technology, but essentially what we're doing is, you know, it's not too different. You're still working on relationships with people. You're still building trust. You're still putting on events. That hasn't really changed with NFT. It hasn't really changed. And we've seen that in some of the rollouts around the world, like NFT NYC. I mean, we're still trying to put on entertainment. We're still trying to put on events. We're trying to obviously decentralize it and we're trying to empower creators, but essentially at the essence, it's something that the skill set that people like Oshi, like, you know, like those guys have been doing for years. They've been representing artists successfully. So transitioning into this new technology, and that what works for Dave and I, we understand, you know, what it means to put on an event, understand what it's needed, understand the pain point at the door. If you can't scan your NFT at the fucking door and you have to wait half an hour, that's not a pleasurable experience. So you understand sometimes it has to be, you know, worked on.
I guess we're seeing NFTs come through as like a supplement, right? You're saying that, you know, we still need to provide entertainment, we still need to adhere to the human psychology. But where are NFTs coming to the point where they are actually helping artists or brands, or where are you seeing that?
I think definitely we can speak on how it helps artists. I mean, that's super clear. And Dave can talk on that as well. But as I said, our background is you know, music industry, it's artist publishing, it's getting paid. And my role as an artist manager is really essentially is making sure your artist is looked after, making sure his rights are looked after, essentially making sure they get paid really quick. They're the pain points in your life. Like if you're not getting paid, you know, it's problematic.
The amount of times I'd be calling, have we got paid going, yet? Is the money in? Is the money in?
I think to answer your question, you know, it really does come down to artists being in control of their financial destiny, being in control of their rights, and not having to wait on other people. So I think, to answer your question, NFTs really do change that dynamic.
And, you know, as a creator and producer, my process, it's just completely changed it. You know, I don't have to wait for a label to say, yes, your music is good or not. And then if it is good, I don't have to wait for them to schedule it for release. And then I don't have to wait for, you know, that to be released and then wait for the money, you know. And, you know, that's how it really changed things for me as an artist and as a creator.
So we talked on the collection agencies.
Yeah.
You know, there are people out there like APRA, like AMCOS, that, you know, maybe they do a good job, maybe they don't. Who really fucking knows? We've worked with them for 10, 15 years. And, you know, I know that they're sitting on absolute shit tons of money. Dave's like, looking
I'm at me like, AMCOS ambassador. Yeah. For life.
Let's be serious. Let's be clear.
Don't hold back,
Sats. There's definitely some question marks over the legacy system. Yeah. I mean, even APRA and AMCOS will tell you, you know, if they were sitting here, that they're sitting on shit tons of unpaid royalties that are just sitting there. Blockchain solves that.
Yeah.
It definitely, you know, and I think that's a really important thing. We wouldn't have hundreds of millions of dollars in unpaid royalties if we had blockchain technology. Yeah,
correct.
That would be in creators' pockets.
Can I ask a dumb question? What's the bottleneck there? Why does that happen? Why does that accumulate to ridiculous amounts?
I've asked that question and said, well, you know, how is it that you end up with $50 million in unpaid royalties? And it comes down to, you know, a lot of overseas payments, a lot of companies going bankrupt in 1989, 1994, not having addresses, not having things, having return mail.
Right.
They're working on fucking mail. Like, you know, you send a check, guy moved, check comes back, the money doesn't get paid. Oh. End of story, not chasing it again.
Wait, and so it just sits there pending forever?
Yeah, I sent you the check, you moved, it didn't get paid.
What are you going to do? You're going to chase this guy who had a moment, but now he's got two kids and a thing, and he's left. You know what I mean? He's left the scene.
Someone died. So over the course of decades, that stuff adds up. And obviously, that's why blockchain is super important. The fact that we don't see more record labels, more publishers embracing it, really does point to the fact that it's not in their best interest, right? If they adopted blockchain technology, if Universal Records, Universal Publishing adopted it, people would get paid more. That's not in their interest.
Right. But they can't even make use
of... No, they can make use of the interest.
Oh, they can make use of the... Yeah, totally. Right. Yeah. Universal blockchain's coming for you.
Yeah, yeah. Universal blockchain's coming for you. APRA is coming for you.
Interesting. I didn't say APRA.
You wear your face
out. it's the truth. You know, you have to speak.
It's weird. Like,
The truth in the booth here, man.
Because, you know, there is a... You know, it's definitely... One of the things that blockchain does is it creates, you know, a level of clarity that you don't see. And the music industry especially, you know, has survived on not having a definite opaque view for managers, for artists, for record labels. Even people who work within these things don't understand how they work.
There's a lot of, I mean, equal amount of smoke and mirrors, but there is a system that is working there that you guys have experienced.
Yeah.
Now... You got like? Do you mind if I shill a little bit of who you guys have launched?
Sure.
Go for it. Cool. Sophie T and Kyle Cox.
They were two people that we've definitely worked with on Future Art. Yeah.
Right. And so two differing creative outlets. Yeah. Right. But you guys have worked with a creative and brought their creations to the blockchain. That has been a joy by other people.
Absolutely.
So what were some of your key takeaways through those two experiences? And what did you find the feedback was like from those two creatives?
I think shout out to Hipworth, who was working with Kyle Cox and had built a level of trust with Kyle Cox. So I think that's a really good indication. I mean, so Hipworth's relationship with Kyle over many years allowed him to bring him to Future Art, and we were able to, you know, work with him on his very first thing. But I think also the Sophie T case is really interesting because she was a Web 2 artist that had very
Instagram artist
that had not a lot of understanding initially on blockchain, but she really embraced it. She really did the work. And then what really impressed us about Sophie T and why she was so successful was the fact that she really took time to educate her audience, really gave the audience back a lot of value, really went through the process hand in hand with them. And it was really successful for her. And she really turned on a lot of her audience to NFTs, to Ethereum, to Web3, to MetaMask. And hats off to her, it really worked for her.
You guys have obviously been across a lot of the projects that are coming out, and you know, you're helping other artists and brands launch theirs. What is something that you're seeing, especially in a bear market? You know, a lot of people are saying 99% of projects are going to fail. What do you think the most determining factor is for a artist to maintain a successful NFT project throughout this bear market?
Can we, just talk about maybe Norman Harmon's Sightseers?
Yeah.
You know, through the middle of a bear market, he did a collection of 500 101s. And, you know, it's an AI-driven but then human-touched-up project. And I don't know if you know Norman Harmon. I suggest you have a look
at him. He's an OG, super rare artist, one of the leaders in like the
critically acclaimed. Yeah. And he recently sold out by Mint 500 101s in the middle of a bear market. You know, 70th.
70th.
And that's, you know, an artist from Edinburgh. That's just, you know.
And I think he's someone who has just stayed the course, you know what I mean? And like he was consistent as he was through the frothy times, and he was consistent through the bear market. And he wasn't super fazed by prices moving up, prices moving down. He's really focused on his art, and that really shone through. I think so much of this scene and so much of the degen, you know, narrative is always about price, mint price. And, you know, that's obviously detrimental to a lot of projects when that liquidity or that price is sucked out of a project. What are you left with? And that's why I think I'm really quite bullish on, you know, the art stuff and artists, because you know, they're really consistent and they're really true to their art form.
Speaking of artists and they're like just building on what you've said, what are your thoughts about the digital renaissance that's going around right now? You guys have experienced many art cycles. You've got some legacy brands and projects you've worked with. I understand industries. What do you think about us being in a digital renaissance stage, especially with your art as well, Dave, like and your creations? Do you think it's sowing the seeds again for another cycle, you know, where people are just like, I need to buy this, I need to buy this?
I think like you say digital renaissance, but for us, it feels like an art renaissance.
An art renaissance.
I mean, that might sound a bit heady, but I mean, Dave and I have always talked about my first foray into, you know, into art collecting was living in London and discovering Banksy very early, and also Invader and Obey, a lot of the street art guys. And looking back upon that that era now and why I fell in love with Banksy, why the whole world fell in love with Banksy, is it really was an artist for our time. Like, you know, my mum grew up with like Andy Warhol, people grew up with Basquiat. For us, Banksy, living in London, he was the fucking god. Like, he was the OG and everything he put up. And I feel like, you know, in this renaissance, I look at people like Xcopy and feel like that they're... So I think every generation throws a hero up the pop chart.
Yeah.
Every generation has its own real, you know, important artists. And that shouldn't stop. And I think there are people out there that Ferocious and Xcopy will be the Banksys and the Basquiats and the Warhols of their time. So we shouldn't be surprised that every generation has an incarnation of a super art hero.
And the medium.
The medium doesn't really matter. Yeah. NFTs,
but it's still a representation of culture. So.
Yeah, so, we have to give a big ups to the trash art community as well.
Which yes.
Is, yeah.
Which you know, Sats has been a big, you know, a hero of, you know, he really... he got in there very early and started buying a lot of trash art. I mean, he's got so much trash art, you wouldn't believe.
Trash art was a moment. Like, I think that's, I don't know if people know too much about the trash art movement, but it sort of kicked off a lot of early buying and collecting in 2020. It happened on Rarible. It was led by, like, legend Robness and Max Osiris and
Gary Cartlidge.
And many, you know, Norman Harmon and Stella Bell and Jay DeLay. Yeah. And a lot of those people that moved, that were banned, or sorry, that didn't have access to Super Rare and they didn't have access to Known Origin. They were gate-kept out. And as soon as I heard that Robness had been expelled from Super Rare, he'd been asked to leave, I was... really excited. Who's been like locked off the radio? It reminded me of like Public Enemy being like, you know, locked off the radio.
Censored.
Censored, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the trash art movement is something that I'm really passionate about. Dave's passionate about. Yeah. I think it represents a lot of what's really good about crypto and really good about the crypto art movement. And I think I would encourage anyone that's not, you know, up to date on crypto art is give that a Google and have a look through that, because there's some incredible artists and mad artwork. Yeah.
I love hearing you talk about art and your history with art. And I hear you've got a very interesting story as to why
I need to have another beer, yes. Every time.
Well, we've got the time limit here, so we might need to keep the clicks.
You got 3 minutes 30, mate.
3 minutes 30. Yeah, right. So as I mentioned, yeah, I was a decent collector of street art. Something I was buying Banksy's back in 2002, 2003 from Pictures on Wall in London, paying about $200. I think I paid $150, $200. Acquired about 30 or 40 Banksy's at the time, bought, sold, trade them, very much into Damien Hirst and all the early Obey stuff. As I mentioned, Invader from Paris. And over our career, I was able to collect a really decent collection.
We would get like royalty checks. And I'd come into his office in King's Cross and he'd have another thing. And I'm like, wow, you're fucking into this shit. Like, yeah, I wouldn't care. So when I look back now.
I felt like I was lucky to see Banksy and realize that he was something special. It was like a once in a generation artist. But
sorry, what was it that made you realize that?
I think it was from same thing that made me realize the trash art stuff. It was a bunch of really switched on early adopters who were super passionate about it. It also spoke to me the art as well. I got it. It was outsider. It was sort of, you know, it was non-conformist. It was massive
and surveillance state. Exactly. Like the whole machine, uh-huh. The machine organism. I was so into Banksy.
Yeah,
like
right.
He pretty much like that.
Changed
like,
the game.
Changed the game. And then that combined with like, what's it, Rob Schneider, like Fight Club and stuff like mm-hmm. that. It was all at that time where it's just like, the fuck is this? Yeah. And then that Banksy like visually put that in front of your face, like, fuck you, this is what it is. And you're like, totally. I can't believe that you were like collecting that, like, and
yeah,
had
from
that.
Like from I was staying up from the. I remember being in Sydney in 2003 or 2004 and staying up all night waiting for the Pictures on Wall drop, pretty much like an NFT drop.
Yeah.
And you'd wait and you'd log on, you'd get logged out, you'd get rugged, and you'd be trying to put your credit card in just to buy a Banksy.
Yeah.
But they were still available. Like you could do that, you know, back then. I definitely felt that he was going to have a moment. And unfortunately, to bring it forward, you know, when I moved to Los Angeles, you know, and set up shop there for like 7 years, I moved all my art into a storage facility over in Brookvale in Sydney. And, you know, sometime in 2019, there was a massive industrial fire. And so I lost, you know, everything that I collected over the course of 20 years, so about 350 works, for about $1 million worth of art uninsured in an all concrete bunker out there, and all turned to fucking
dust.
So I flew home. My mum rang me and was like, I got some bad news. I was like, nah, it's gonna be okay. It's in a concrete thing. And flew home and like ended up crawling through the fucking things, you know, breaking through the police line to have a look. And yeah, I was like, oh fuck, okay, it's all gone. And that it was a really traumatic experience for me, and not just losing the artwork, but losing everything else that we own. But it was a pivotal moment. It was a real a moment that led me to crypto art, because pretty much soon after that, I really started to buy digital art. And I think a lot of that was born out of the fact that it could never be burnt, it could never be taken away. It was a crush.
We used to speak pretty much on the daily, and I mean, I probably didn't speak to him for about 3 months. Like, he couldn't really, or when we would, like, I couldn't bring it up, it was difficult.
The art, I realized how important art was as well, like it's not the money or the financial effect or whatever, but I did realize that I was really passionate about, I mean, I think also, which is something which you see a lot in NFTs and you see a lot in collectibles, was I did feel a part of a community. Like, I did have a Banksy.
Yeah.
And I did have that. And when I would meet someone, even though I wouldn't be like, hey, I own a Banksy. But, you know, if it came up in conversation, it'd be something I'd be really, like,
passionate about.
Yeah. And I was able to, you know, to show people just my story through that by living in London. It represented that. So when I could definitely see very early on that crypto was going to take that experience but then just fucking hypercharge it
yeah.
because of crypto and because of the internet where it is today, because of Discord, because of Twitter, because of communities, because of that. Yeah. And so, yeah, I sort of understood where it was going to go.
Now you got a Ledger wallet.
Right? I've got a Ledger wallet.
That shit ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, right.
Thank you for sharing that.
No worries, man. Anytime.
Still got another lifetime ahead of you to reaccumulate. I'm sure we can work that out.
Went so hard on the, you know, went so hard collecting digital art because it just sort of made sense to do, and it was cheap at the time.
Yeah,
it wasn't going to cost, you know, millions of dollars to acquire.
Yeah. Future art. Just dialing back to like. The culture that and the brand that you guys are building, it's been described as experimental and innovative. Do you guys feel that that is suitable words for you guys?
Yeah, like I think the artists that we bring on are super innovative, super inventive. We bring on a virtual reality. The guy we work with, Winslow Porter from The Tree and his next experience that he's bringing out for us. These guys are unbelievable. They're innovators.
Yeah.
They're absolute scientists and creative technologists. So, yeah, like I think that description does fit well.
Yeah, I think Dave and I are really good at spotting talent and working with talent. And I think, you know, maybe we're not the most innovative or thing, but we definitely can see people that are. So working with, like, Marco Matic, who is, like, an absolute fucking leader in his field in AR, working with Giant Swan,
yeah.
who is, you know, untouchable in the realm of VR art, and working with, you know, the guys from The Tree, that's something that we pride ourselves on, is digging around and finding that talent and building relationships with them and then helping them deliver their vision. Yeah. So I think that's what future art really is about. We're more a curation, platform.
I suppose the old school word would be kind of A&R in a way.
Yeah,
but
a little
like
bit.
I think it's curation.
Yeah.
Cool. And for those who aren't aware, The Tree was an exhibit that received many awards that you got. That was at Vivid, right?
Yeah, yeah. I first ran into The Tree. I was lucky enough to head out to Sundance Film Festival,
yeah.
which occurs every year out in Park City in Utah. And they have a New Frontiers section, which focuses on VR storytelling. And it was literally the hottest ticket you can get. Like, no one's interested in going to the films. Everyone wants to go to the VR. And the year that, the last year that I went is where we first saw The Tree. And it was mind-bending. It won the award for best VR storytelling. And so as soon as we had the opportunity...
Yeah, we met in Miami, and we just hit it off like really well with Winslow. Big shout out, Winslow.
Big shout out.
And yeah, we were like, we want you for Vivid.
Yeah.
Let's do it. And me in the background, he's been working on this next, because this was like a few years ago with The Tree. Because of COVID, he couldn't tour it. So we did the debut here in Australia, but in the background, he's been working on this next experience, which I don't want to talk just about yet.
Yeah,
but
okay.
It's very exciting.
Okay.
I do think one thing we were surprised about with Future Art is like, we were like, yeah, the music's fucking on point and art's on point. I think I was definitely surprised was the appetite for VR that the public or the audience had. We were overwhelmed on the first three Future Arts with just demand that people wanted to experience VR.
Yeah.
They wanted to put the headsets on. I was totally blown away by it. That's why we definitely, you know, bought in The Tree. And I think even the last Future Art at Vivid, it was like completely booked, instantly sold. Like, it could have gone for days.
Yeah.
It literally
we couldn't
gone for
fit
weeks.
More
yeah.
people in. Like, they were actually doing the experience a tiny bit shorter.
Yeah.
Just so we could get more people through to experience it. And just to back up what he's saying, like, you know, the immersive technologies is really, because people, you know, they hear about it, they see it in the papers, they hear, you know, they read about it, but they've never experienced it. And I
think, yeah, and it's something special when you're looking at. I mean, we're really excited about the future of VR storytelling or about immersive stuff, because I think we're only just on the very cusp of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, shout out to all the VR guys we work with, Space Painter, who has created a
brilliant.
Lot of insane artwork for future art. It's been an absolute legend. As we mentioned, obviously Giant Swan, but I'm excited by what the VR guys are doing with the NFTs. It's something that we're really supportive of. One of the things we were really excited about in the AR space is that during the last Future Art is Vivid, we did get to work with Yahoo, who you know, who were incredible. Like we think of Yahoo as like Yahoo Mail and stuff, but those guys were really pushing the envelope on supporting AR creators. So we were able to work with Sewa, Adafwa, and M and Coldy as well to create some mad AR installations across Sydney Harbour.
Cool.
And, you know, it is, with Future Art, that's definitely something that we want to do. Like, having the support of, like, those larger brands allows us to do bigger, pitcher, crazier shit.
Yeah.
And doing that idea of having those artists create AR stuff on that level is something that we'd love to, you know, keep going through.
Sewa is pretty cool. She's got a whole digital person that she's created, a character, right? That's
absolute Don. She's a great example of the insane talent that we've got here in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, like what she's doing, shout out, you know, to her. She's just absolutely smashing it across the world with huge brands.
Yeah.
You know, from Mercedes to fucking
I was traveling and I look at the back of Time magazine and there's her artwork.
Yeah.
And it's an international magazine. Yeah, but that's Time, and you're just like, wow, sick.
And that's definitely we feel really strongly about you know, every Future Art event we've done, we've definitely always wanted to shine a light on the Australian artist.
So you guys, you're on the front lines, right? You're there. The trenches. Yeah. In the trenches.
Hand-to-hand combat.
Sometimes.
You need airstrikes.
Sure.
How does that, you know, you guys are there at Future Art. You've got the public coming through, right? This is their first experience, first exposure to digital art some of the time.
Yeah.
What are those conversations you're having? Are you realizing that
they're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, right.
Why does this happen?
And so, we, you know, one way that we educate people is having a QR code. And that brings on to more information about the artist.
But it was hand-to-hand combat when we first started.
You know, we were walking around with people.
Yeah, opening the door and we were both just walking around with people and they were just like, what is it? How does it work? You know, why? And yeah, I mean, I think that's obviously slowly changing, but there are still people from the art side that are really question it. There's still a lot of mistrust. There's still a lot of non-belief that still exists, you know,
massively,
especially on the art side. I know we've seen Sotheby's and Christie's and, you know, fuck around the NFT space, but
just seeing the Damien Hirst thing burn and
so much hatred.
Around.
But shout out Damien Hirst for fucking burning our NFTs.
Yeah, well, burning our physical, and I've still got my NFT.
Yeah, totally.
I'd love to touch on that real quick. So the concept behind that was you could either pick to keep your physical or your digital, is that right?
Yeah, he gave you a year to choose. So at first he did it like a drop and it sold out. And it was oversubscribed, actually. And so you got given the NFT and then you were given 1 year to choose. And at any point in that year, you could redeem it for the physical and the NFT would get burned. Mm-hmm. Or if you waited all the way to the end and you wanted to keep the NFT, Damien Hirst is going to burn the physical.
Which he did last night. He built a whole fucking burning, like, you know,
furnace
and did it last night.
Live.
And he, yeah, I mean, he's a guy.
Mine, called Sick of It All, was in flames, mate. In flames.
Wow.
And same as his.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like a lot of the conversation that we've been having with the public, we just launched an artist up in Brisbane. We did an IRL and URL cross at an exhibition. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that we were talking to were like, oh, if we buy the NFT, it's a tenth of the price of the original painting. So if we buy the NFT, can we print it? And that was a really big sort of feedback, I guess, that we got. And it was kind of like, can we just print it?
Yeah, of course you can print it. Right click and save, as Xcopy said. Yeah,
yeah, I've done it.
Yeah.
I think, but NFTs that I own, I mean, I go, well, I want to see on my walls.
I mean, you can also buy a Banksy and print that. Yeah. You know, like,
I'll get the Mona Lisa there. I mean, do you know what I mean?
You can buy fake Banksys on eBay. Yeah,
I think go for it.
Did that with a couple. Well, you did that for my birthday with my Astro Bro. I'm in love with it. Yeah. He's a fucking champion. I think that was a lot of the taking something intangible, making it tangible, was a bit easier for someone to wrap their head around.
Yeah.
But again, it's like I mean, you guys have experienced like the demand and the height, the scarcity and demand factors when you're in the NFT market and you just want to buy it. Like it's just minted, you know what I mean? The whole idea of minting. And when like trying to wrap someone's head around that at an exhibition while talking to them and they're like, I need a MetaMask. And we did the same avenue you guys did. We had a QR code that had like a nice little Canva graphic design. Like, this is how you do it. This is why seed phrase is important. Once you kind of get through that, they're like, yeah, but then what? And they're like,
What do you mean then, boy?
Yeah, you've got it in your wallet.
That was a hard thing for us. Yeah. We made a decision early on, rightly or wrongly, but we made a decision that we were very keen on never to onboard a single person into a MetaMask through a wall. We just didn't want to have that responsibility to
for them to come back going, "Where's my seed phrase? Just got scammed."
Yeah.
My whole thing's been there. We didn't.
Yeah, we made a decision very early on. It was like, but also I think
education's
important. Education and you finding out how to set up a MetaMask is empowering. Yeah. You learning yourself is empowering. People should work for it. They shouldn't just be handed a wallet or a seed phrase. For us anyway, I think it's important that you go through those processes so you understand.
But if we're going to actually operate in a decentralized system, not that everything needs to be decentralized, but it's like just decentralized generation, you need to take accountability and responsibility. Yep. And that's really cool to hear. You're like, you know what? I don't want to take that.
Yeah.
You guys, if you want to
work that out.
Once you've worked it out, we're here and we've got this.
Yeah. So
come and enjoy this with us.
Yeah
that's, cool.
That's where we were at.
Just want to wrap up with a question that we ask all our guests. Mm-hmm. Speaking of language and talking to the public, hand-to-hand combat, how to explain things to people. How would you explain an NFT to your grandma?
Fuck.
Okay.
Through a Ouija board?
Sorry. Okay, look, I mean, okay, maybe not my grandma, but maybe my mom, right? Where I could go, the height of my career was at the height of music piracy, where the value of music went to zero because everyone could get it for free. Through the blockchain and a non-fungible token, now we have a token that represents this track or this piece of art. Now, no one can... I don't care if anybody replicates this bit. They can't replicate this. And this is where the value lies.
Yeah. For me, it's just digital authenticity. I think that's just... Yeah. That's how I explain it. If you get it, you get it. And if you don't, it's probably not for you just yet. So. it's not for everyone. Yeah. Yet. It's not.
But when they are, future art will be there. Show them a good time down that rabbit hole.
Here's a nice bit of art. And good times, exactly.
Fuck yeah, guys. And nice. And I know you can't share everything, but what are you guys most bullish on in the next 12 months? Where can people find you?
Bullish on future art back here in Australia for Vivid.
Vivid, we're there. We've got International Music Summit in Ibiza happening at the start of the Ibiza season. That's 100% happening.
We might switch in a little Miami Basel show. We might be announcing.
Do you guys need to be interviewed over in Ibiza?
Absolutely. We do.
Peroni, we can sort out some sponsorship for you.
Hey, but listen, love what you guys are doing, and congratulations on Oz NFT. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank really you so appreciate much, it. Guys. Yeah. We're honored to be here chatting with you, and we're excited to see where it all happens.
Nice one.
Let's go. Thank you.
Guys.
Nice work.
Thank you. Thank you guys.
That's great. Appreciate it.